Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, first division, second wave, sadhana bhakti. Yesterday we heard about the 10 primary angas or limbs of devotional service, which are most important. Therefore they're listed first. These are the absolutes, the dues. And now he gives a list of 10 activities to avoid. These are the don'ts. So he says, this is text 78 through 82. Sangha tyago vidurena bhagavat vimukhyarjane shishyadyananu vanditvam maharambad yanudyama. Bahugranta kalabhyasa vyakya vara vivarjanam vyavaharepi akarapanyam shokat yavashap vartita. Anya devam avagyacha bhutananu dvega dayata seva nama pararanam udbhavad bhava karita krishna tad bhakta vid Vesha Vinidadyasa Ishnuta Vyavati Rekaya Misham Dasham Dashanam Sat Anushtita Anushtiti. Well, these are 10 things to be given up. Give up the association of people who are opposed to the Lord. I can read, there's different editions of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, so we can read the different translations and get different shades of meaning, which will help us understand it. So number 11, shunning from a long distance the company of those who are averse to the Lord. In other words, keep a good distance. Keep your mind far away from the non-devotees. Keep your thoughts far away from the non-devotees. Keep your eyes far away from the non-devotees. Keep your bodies far away from the non-devotees. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Mayapur, Navadvip Leela, if he just saw a Vishayi, if he saw a person engaged in sense gratification, hard to imagine, but he said if he simply saw a person engaged in sense gratification, he would immediately jump in the Ganga with all his clothes on. The way ladies bathe with their sari and choli and everything. You have a dhoti and pitambara dhoti and chadar. He wouldn't put on a gamsha. He says, oh, a vishaya, a materialistic person. Oh, this is very contaminating. I must purify myself. Of course, if we use this standard today, then we would never get out of the Ganga. We would become fish swimming in the Ganga. Because everywhere we look, people are engaged in gross sense gratification. But I think the idea is that one way we can look at it is the Ganga. And Ganga is a holy river like Saraswati. In the first canto of Bhagavatam, it explains that Vyasadeva had his ashram. His ashram was situated on the banks of the Ganga and Saraswati in the Himalayas. So this means, another meaning of this, the acharyas give, is that ashram means shelter, and the Saraswati represents the river of knowledge. It's called Vidyanadi, the river of knowledge. So in all cases, in all times, in all places, one should always take shelter of the river of knowledge. One should always be close by. His mind should always be close by the river of knowledge, his body, his life, his activities. So therefore the ashram of Vyasadeva was besides the river of knowledge. This is a metaphorical explanation. In the same way, Lord Chaitanya jumped in the Ganga whenever he saw a materialist with his clothes and body and everything. So the Ganga is also a sacred river like Saraswati. So jumping in the Ganga for us can mean taking shelter of transcendental knowledge, because the Ganga flows from the lotus feet of Vishnu. This is the origin of the Ganga. So the Ganga is Vishnu Charanamrita, The Ganga is pure. Shuddha Nadi. It is a pure river. The transcendental knowledge also emanates from Vishnu. Ganga is emanating from his toe, and transcendental knowledge is emanating from his mouth. The origin of both is the same. The origin of Ganga and transcendental knowledge is none other than Vishnu, Vishnu Sarup, the form of Vishnu. So jumping in the Ganga, whenever we see a materialist, jumping in the Ganga means jumping in the river of knowledge, taking shelter of transcendental knowledge, be connected with Vishnu. And this is pavitram, this is prophylactic and purifying, protective. And this way, no matter how many materialists we see, how many materialists we touch or interact with in our movements, we will not be affected because we'll be constantly bathed in the river of knowledge. So this is another way to look at Lord Chaitanya's pastime of jumping in the Ganga. He's advising us, stay in the Ganga. We even have terms like this. Be immersed in transcendental knowledge. You must have read like this in any, the English translations. Paravidya nimajanto. Always be immersed. Always be submerged in transcendental knowledge. Consciousness should always be deep into the knowledge of reality. Always seeing things through the eyes of Shastra. Shastra Chakshush. Don't take your eyes off Shastra and don't see. Don't take your glasses off. If a man doesn't have good vision, if his vision is poor, nearsighted, or myopia or whatever, nearsighted or farsighted, then he takes off his glasses and everything becomes foggy, becomes hazy, indistinct, unclear, and it's dangerous for him to move. So similarly, we should never take the eyes of transcendental knowledge away from our soul. Otherwise, everything becomes hazy. Everything becomes cloudy, and it becomes difficult to move or progress in spiritual life if we abandon the jnana chakshus or the shastra chakshus. We're always meant to move by looking through the eyes of knowledge. Look before you leap. Think before you look. I have a phrase, look before you leap. Leap means to jump. Prabhupada often said, at least a few times, he says, an intelligent man thinks twice or thrice before he says something. He weighs it's called discrimination, vichar, shastra vichar. There's a term there. Shastra vichar means consider everything vichar means consideration, evaluation, discrimination. Evaluate, discriminate, weigh, balance. Understand everything on the basis of knowledge, transcendental knowledge, shastra vichara. Nana shastra vichara naika nipano sadharma samstapako loka namita karano tribhuvane manyo sharanya karo radha krishna padaran vindavajana nandena mataliko Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghuyago Sri Jiva Gopalako. Six Goswamis and all the devotees following in their footsteps, known as the Rupa Anugas, Anugata. Those that are going to the goal of Rupa Goswami, Anugata, or Anugatya, Rupa Anuga, those that are following the path outlined by Rupa Goswami, they are Nana Shastra Vichara Naikanipano. They were following the six Goswamis who considered Sad-Dharma. They considered all the principles of Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta, or Gaudiya Vaishnava Sad-Dharma, the eternal religion of Gaudiya Vaishnava and Vaishnavism. They considered these points, all the different Shastras, Nana-Shastra, varieties of Shastra, Nana-Shastra-Vichara. They deeply pondered the points of Gaudiya Vedanta by perusing and deeply studying all the Vedic literatures to save us a lot of time. When you see the references in the backs of the various works, it's astounding that they read all these Sanskrit texts and picked and chose and selected the most appropriate verses, stories, histories, itihasas, and sections which would support and strengthen their presentation of Gaudiya Vedanta on the basis of the traditional knowledge of Smriti, and often cases Shruti also. So they did tremendous work, especially Sri Jiva Goswami. He was the lawmaker. He and Sanatana Goswami were like the lawmakers or Gaudiya Vedanta, they establish the deep foundation of law, and the ras and the practice was established by Rupa Goswami. The implementation and the expression of these principles was exhibited and taught by Raghunath Das Goswami. He's the Prayojanacharya. So this is these are the 10 things to avoid. So that's number 11. Number 12, avoiding the temptation of giving initiation to too many persons and thus becoming entangled by disciples. And this edition says, not being attached to making disciples. Avoiding the temptation of giving initiation. Well, this list here, these are 10 activities that if one engages in these activities, then his ability to practice Vaidhi Sadhana or devotional service will be impaired. It will be reduced. It may even be blocked. Associating with non-devotees, making too many disciples, one may become entangled. Naturally, one is entangled with them automatically. This is the nature when people come together and in a bond of a relationship. When people come together, then there's an exchange, a karmic exchange. Be they guru or father and mother, husband and wife, children, parents, teachers, students. Whenever there's sambandha, there's karmic exchange. Whenever there's relationship. Relation means acceptance. Whenever you accept someone, you accept their body, or you accept their mind, or you accept their emotions, or when you accept that person, then you accept their karmic payload. And then you have to download it somewhere, or be downloaded by it, or transfer it somewhere in the dump yard. Your payload. So that's sometimes gurus, they get enamored. Oh, I'm such a big guru, Mahamandaleshwara, Ekazarat. I used to be only Eksawat. I had a few disciples, and they called me 108 Eksawat. But now I have so many thousands of disciples, I'm Ekazarat, 1008. And then there's Dasazarat, 10,008. That's if you're really, really big guru. I have a big title, a big ashram, and I have name and fame. Whatever I say for the cause of Dharma, it comes in the front pages. And they give me so much money and flattery and encouragement, pratishtata. And this bolsters my false ego and gives me a great sense of, makes me feel very valuable and worthy. Although many of these disciples may be useless, parasitic type of followers that aren't really even qualified. So Rupa Goswami is warning. This is even on the path. One, the first thing is avoid non-devotees. That's the first of the 10. That's number 11 of the 64 limbs of devotion. And then it's of the 10 things not to do. Then the second thing, first he says avoid non-devotees, keep them at a distance. Then he says avoid devotees. Avoid making too many devotees. Avoid making initiating too many people that are unqualified. This is a danger. And then this third thing, or 13th, not being over enthusiastic about pomp and grandeur. And here it says, don't be enthusiastic for huge undertakings. So once Prabhupada addressed this point, this means building big, big temples. And when you get involved with building big, big temples, then there's so much endeavor, so much passion, so much opportunity to forget Krishna. And so Prabhupada said, we are working so hard to establish these centers in Bombay, Vrindavan, Mayapur. And it's for the benefit of others. Personally, we can sit under a tree and chant Hare Krishna. Of course, Prabhupada did that in his own life. He went to New York and he literally sat under a tree. It was an oak tree in the Tompkins Square Park in New York in the fall, around this time of the year. And he would, every afternoon he would go there, especially on Sunday, in the park, and chant Hare Krishna under the tree. He didn't have any place. He had a little hole in the wall where he lived, tiny room. A little loft or whatever they call it. But for the benefit of others, Prabhupada said, who will hear me? Who will hear me if I sit under a tree? A handful of people. But if we have some facility, temple is only a facility for hearing, Shravanam Kirtanam, hearing about Krishna. Let everyone come and sit comfortably and hear about Krishna. So in that way, and of course the Six Goswamis, they were ordered by Lord Chaitanya to establish the worship of the Lord in Vrindavan. And they did. They excavated the holy places and the ancient deities of Vrindavan that were carved, that were installed 5,000 years ago by Bajranav, Krishna's great grandson, by the dint of their pure devotion. They were able to find the whereabouts of Madan Gopal, who became known as Madan Mohan, and Govindaji and Gopinath. And they established the worship of these primal deities, teen Prabhu, the teen Murtis of Vrindavan. These are the Sambandha deities and Avideya deities and Prayojana deities, Madan Mohan, Govindaji and Gopinath. And they were doing the puja as Lord Chaitanya ordered them. Find these ancient deities and establish Seva Puja. And they were doing it. Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he was worshipping Radha Raman, keeping him in a tree. And Sanat Goswami was keeping Madan Mohan in a tree, in the branch of a tree. The temple was a tree branch on the top of the hill, Dwadasaditya Tila. And he would go out and collect some flower. Sanat Goswami collects some flour, then mix that flour with a little Yamuna water, then roll it into a ball, something like chapati dough. And then he didn't have any cow dung, he didn't have any cows. So he collects some dry twigs, wood and leaves, and then he would collect them together, make a fire. That's a little fire on top of the hill, and then he had these little wheat balls, then he'd throw them in the fire. And then he roasted wheat balls. It's called bati. And then after some time they were cooked. And in order for them to be cooked inside, they had to be a little bit burned outside. So it had that special charcoal taste. Which is, one doesn't mind eating charcoal if he has a little salt. But eating charcoal, without salt is quite difficult. Very dry and burned. But somehow or other, he was offering these with great love and devotion to Madan Mohan. Madan Mohan was accepting those offerings of dry, charcoal brown, or charcoal charred bhati. No salt, no sabji, no chutney, no kasundi sauce or any kind of thing. That yellow mustard sauce they have in Mayapur. Gurukul kids like. It's quite a dry affair and charcoal at that. So this way, in a very crude and humble way, the Goswamis were worshipping their deities. They were not making any separate endeavor to go collect lots of money and build a big temple. They simply did their bhajan, did their writing, did their madhukari, and did their puja, following the order of Lord Chaitanya. Because their work was different. They were ordered primarily to write books, Bhakti Shastra Likana. They were ordered to write the Bhakti Shastras and to establish the places of Leela and to establish the Seva Puja of the Radha and Krishna. And they did. And they were giving some high level lectures to selected Shiksha disciples, Shamananda Prabhu and Srinivasacharya and Narottam Das Thakur and Jiva Goswami and the likes of these type of devotees ever receiving shiksha from Rupa and Sanatana Raghunath Bhatta. And Krishna's Kaviraj was receiving shiksha from Raghunath Das Goswami. And this way it was going on. Then some very rich people came along, disciples of Raghunath Bhatta and others, and they wanted to do seva. They were kshatriyas, very, very wealthy, very generous, and very religious-minded Hindus. So they said, listen, your Thakur is in the branch of a tree, let us build a big temple for him. So, may we do that? So then Raghunath Bhatta, he said, yes, you build a temple for my Shiksha Guru, Rupa Goswami. So then Man Singh, he arranged for a stone from his employer. Man Singh is a Hindu, of course, from Jaipur. But he's working for Akbar. He was one of the commanders of his army. Interesting combination. Hindu general and Muslim emperor. So he built the temple of Radha Govindaji, which was opened in 1590. It was interesting. It was one Muslim emperor arranged for the construction of the temple in 1590. Then his own descendant came in 1670 and demolished it. Aurangzeb, descendant of Akbar. 90 years later, I'd say 80 years later. This is the way time works. One builds, one destroys. So they personally didn't engage in any over endeavor to build big temples. It all happened by Krishna's arrangement. This is the same thing with Prabhupada. Prabhupada, he wanted to have these temples for a long, long time. He wanted to have major centers in Mayapur, Vrindavan and Bombay. And then he simply continued with his bhajan. Prabhupada didn't go out and collect the money to build these temples. But he ordered his disciples. Krishna arranged for many great devotees and disciples of Srila Prabhupada to step forward to cooperate and combinedly work to build these temples, collect the money, design the temple, execute the construction. And Prabhupada simply kept giving the energy, the guidance, and going on with Bhagavatam translation, lecturing, guiding disciples, doing his bhajan, his shiksha. This, of course, is the best way to go. Then the 14th thing is abandonment of double dealing or too much love of arts and crafts, avoiding studying too many books and expositions, and too much of logically fallacious reasoning. That's number 14. Rather long-winded way of saying. And then it's told here, avoiding the study of useless books in order to earn a living or to defeat others in useless arguments. So, abandonment of double dealing or too much love for arts and crafts. What that means exactly, it's hard to say. Quite an elaborate translation. Bahugranta kalabhyasa vyakyavada vivarjanam. Well, the translation is quite accurate in terms of the word, literal word meaning. It says kalabhyas. Kala means arts and crafts. So maybe someone, a devotee, may be too much involved in extraneous activities, pursuing his music career and concentrating more on tabla playing than Bhagavatam study. Although he has some other way to make money, and Krishna is sending him sufficient money, but he's somehow hell-bent on the idea that he's going to become a great tabla player, which is his own idea. So these type of interest in the arts and crafts, and of course Baho is quite obvious. Baho Grant means many books, studying many books, as it says here, avoiding the study of useless books in order to earn a living or to defeat others in useless arguments. Sometimes this might be applied to devotees who go to college because they want to get a PhD and make money by that way. Of course, you have to make money somehow. And these are very delicate and difficult points to implement. Each devotee has to trace out how these points, these limbs, these negative activities apply to him. Phalam parichyate, judge a thing by its results. Often devotees say, I'm going to college to get a degree so that I can be a professor. And when I'm a professor, I'm going to use my influence and my position to teach Hinduism or to teach Gaudiya Vedanta and this way preach Krishna consciousness. So we have to see what is the result of the activity. Sometimes the intention is good, but the final expression is somewhat not so good. Yes, I'm going to preach. Then they get a degree, then they get a good position, a good income, and the preaching is zero. And the income is more, many zeros and one number in front of it. $50,000, $100,000. And they forgot about their good intentions. There's a phrase in English, the path to hell is paved with good intentions. So, you may have good intentions, but if you're not guided properly and always keeping good association and performing sincere bhajan, you may be misled by your so-called good intentions and end up belly up, gasping for air, missing the point of life. So these points require elaboration, so anyone who's, this is just, we can go through them, and the application depends on the circumstance. Then number 15 is giving up bad taste in dealing with others. And here it says, not feeling miserable in any material circumstances. So we should be careful. Don't become miserable. Of course, the world's full of misery. And it's a miserable place. No place for a gentleman. But misery means tamagun. Because misery and lamentation are all products of tamagun. And devotees are supposed to avoid tamagun. Bad taste in dealing with others. In other words, there's no bad taste in dealing with others. If one deals with others in the minimal way, gets the job done, doesn't get involved, doesn't get attached. Then number 16, not being overwhelmed in distress and other ills of life. And here it says, not being subject to lamentation or other extreme emotions. In other words, the idea is be equipoised. There are 26 qualities of a devotee. One is equipoised. Be balanced. There's a verse like that in Bhagavad Gita that the devotee is not disturbed. Very basic verse. He's not disturbed. He always keeps Krishna in the forefront. He always remembers his goal in life, his sankalpa. He always works with great energy to attain Krishna's mercy and always feels himself protected by Krishna and encouraged and maintained by Krishna. So he always works enthusiastically and patiently in all circumstances, depending on the blessings of Krishna and the protection of Krishna and the goodwill of Krishna, which is expressed. Krishna's protection and his goodwill is expressed through the environment. The environment is arranged in such a way by the Lord and the cooperation of the demigods, karmana devanetrena jantar deho patiye, so that the devotee can make progress. So-called negative or opposition in the environment is actually an opportunity to surrender more, and thereby progress more. More surrender, more progress. More surrender, deepening of attachment. When we become, our attachment to Krishna deepens, and we progress towards Krishna realization sooner, and we leave this material world sooner, or more hastily, let's say. So the devotee is Matra Sparshasta Kontaya Shitoshna Shukadukada Agama Payano Nityastam Tatiksha Shabharata Tatikshava Tatikshva Kurunaka Suridasavadehina Kapila Muni tells the same point that Krishna tells Arjuna in Gita in the third canto. And his mother, Devahuti, is asking, she said, what are the symptoms of a saintly person? Tatikshva Krunika Suridas Savidehino. First thing he says is Tatikshva. And Krishna says Tatikshva. That the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course of time are like the appearance and the disappearance of the winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception of Sahina Bharata. And one must learn to tolerate them and not be disturbed. So Tatikshva means tolerance. A sadhu is a saintly person, a devotee. He tolerates heat and cold, happiness and distress, honor and dishonor, gain and loss, promotion and demotion. He goes on. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. Jesus said something like that. So you can beat me, you can throw stones at me, but I steadily go on. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Prabhupada often said, don't be surprised who leaves, be surprised who stays. So those who stay in Krishna Bhakti, they're determined. They're equipoised, they're tolerant, they're steadfast, forbearing, enthusiastic, and patient in their progress of devotion, progress of practice, rather, of bhakti. Slow and steady wins the race, they say. So now, number 17, avoiding disrespect for other gods. So this is the devatas. One should not show disrespect to the devatas. Sometimes neophyte devotees, they misconstrue this point. And the name and their enthusiasm to worship Krishna, and their zeal to worship Krishna, they become negligent of the other devatas, and they even become sometimes hateful. Oh, this Shiva, he's not God. He's Ganesh. What is this Ganesh or Shiva? This is due to ignorance, lack of experience, lack of maturity, and understanding of the hierarchy of supremacy of the divinity. The divinity of the Lord is expressed through different agents, different representatives that are carrying on his work at different levels. The devatas, the devis and devatas are all agents of the Lord. They're all parts and parcels of the Lord. They're all angas of the Lord. They're delegated powers in different realms of the material world. They're ministers of heat, water, rain, wind, etc. So we should see the integral relationship of everything. All is one. One for all. All is one. Everything is actually expressions of Krishna's energy. Prasya shakti vividaya shriyate subhavaki jnana balakriyacha. That all the work is going on. There's bala, this performance of work, this high, incredible, intricate organization of the universe, and this movement of the whole universe, the planets and all the beings within those planets, is all being orchestrated by the will of the Lord through his various representatives. It's a massive governmental organization, universal government, with Bhagavan Sri Krishna on the top of the pyramid, and so many countless representatives and helpers panning out below him. So whatever you do to the least of my creation, Jesus said, whatever you do to the least of my creation, that you do unto me. So if we harm an ant, or we harm some insignificant being, or show disrespect to an insignificant being, and there's a category, there's a injunction about that, it's called jiva himsa, to commit violence or to cause distress to a jiva. Jiva is the minutest form of Godhead, the minutest expression of Godhead, the minutest and smallest expression of divinity is the jiva, jivatma, very tiny. And the Shvetasvatara Upanishad says you take one hair and cut the hair 10,000 pieces, and one 10,000th the tip of the hair, that's the size of the jiva. That jiva is an expression of divinity. Amayvam cho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. Mama amsha jiva loke. The jiva in this world and anywhere is mama amsha, my part. So this is the smallest expression of divinity, is a jiva. So if we offend a tiny jiva, an ant, and cause distress to him, that's a sin. That disregard, that disrespect. What about, what to speak of the demigods? They're big jivas. An ant is a little jiva. And a devata is a big jiva. Or a devi is a big jiva. Durga Devi, etc. Arundhati Devi, or Shachi Devi. Indra, Brahma, Shiva. They're also jivas, but very powerful representatives of Godhead, of divinity. So above, so below. God is in the ant, God is in the devas, God is everywhere. His will is reigning everywhere. We must recognize His will, we must recognize His hand in everything. We must recognize His presence everywhere and act accordingly with the utmost respect, with the utmost dignity, and with the utmost humility. This is the proper expression of devotional intelligence. This is the proper expression of devotional understanding. All are friendly. The environment is positive. All are my friends. All are helping me. All are helping agents. All are pushing me forward. All are lifting me upward. All are representing the Lord. And everyone is pushing me towards the Lord. Everyone is pulling me towards the Lord. Everyone is lifting me towards the Lord. And the Lord is the supreme puppeteer behind everyone. He's moving all the parts and parcels for my benefit. So it's a cooperative, a mutual cooperation. This is devotion. We have no enemies. In other words, no devi, no devata is our enemy. They're all our friends. So that's 17, avoiding disrespect for other gods. 18, refrain from harassing or causing worry to any being. Well, I've already concluded that. Not giving disturbance to other living beings. It says, Bhuta Anudvega Dayata. So, that's the Sanskrit. Then not committing of seva aparad or nama aparad. Endeavoring with care and alertness. This is 19. To be free from the offenses of lapses in worshipping the deities and chanting the name of the Lord during the rudimentary stage of practice of sadhana bhakti while still under the fetters of bondage. In other words, while we are in or on the stage of anartha nivritti, we should be very careful to avoid the 10 offenses to the holy name, nama parad, and also seva parad. Seva generally means in the seva, the Murti Seva, Sri Archa Murti Seva. These are the Seva Aparads. There's so many Aparads to the deity. These must be avoided. This is the 9th of the 10 things to avoid. And the 10th one, which is number 20, the 20th limb of devotion, not tolerating malice or slander or calumny hurled against Krishna or his devotees. This is rather eloquent, or rather high language way of saying. Not tolerating the criticism or blaspheming of Krishna and his devotees by those who hate them. So if someone tries to offend the devotees or Krishna, then we should act to protect the devotees and protect the Lord by even sacrificing our body or whatever. So these 10 forms or angas of sadhana bhakti are to be followed as indirect spiritual practices. So these are indirect, in other words, direct spiritual practices or activities are the first 10 which we mentioned. These are practices, these are direct, and these are pleasing to the Lord, and these are beneficial and helpful to help us move forward on the path of devotion. And these second 10 that we discussed today, these are called indirect processes or practices, because by avoiding these things and being careful about these things, we will not retard our progress. We will not slow down our progress in the path of bhakti. Vishwanath has a commentary about this number, this 19th item, about avoiding seva-aparadhas and nama-aparadhas. Vishwanath says, certainly a neophyte devotee will commit seva-aparadhas and nama-aparadhas while practicing sadhana-bhakti. Nevertheless, after committing these seva or nama-aparadhas, the neophyte devotee, the sadhaka, he should be very careful to avoid those offenses in the future. So he may make some offense, but we don't continually repeat it or continue it. We say, oh, I made this offense. This is very bad. Don't let me do this again. And we feel some repentance and before the Lord, and we beg for his mercy and that he will give us the strength not to fall again to that mistake. So then he summarizes in text 83, Asyas tatra praveshaya toratvepi yanga vimshate trayam pradana mevoktam guru padashrayadikam. These 20 limbs or angas serve as the door for entering bhakti, pravesh dwara. So everyone knows dwaraka. Dwara means doorway, pravesh means entrance. So this is the entrance. If we want to enter the door of bhakti, then we have to avoid 10 things and implement 10 things. The first three limbs, the first three angas, taking shelter of the feet of guru, receiving teachings after initiation, and serving the guru with respect are said to be the three principal limbs of devotion. Vishnu says, though all these 20 limbs, the 10 do's and the 10 don'ts, all these 20 angas of devotion act as doors to bhakti, the first three are the most important. The first three are all about guru. In other words, the most important aspect, the conclusion is, the most important aspect, the primary aspect of devotion to Krishna, the key point to remember, if one wants to approach the doorway of devotion, if one wants to pravesh, enter the doorway of go pass through the doorway of devotion and enter the house of bhakti, enter the house of service to the Lord, or enter the Lord's house. They have these phrases in the Western countries. They say the church is the house of the Lord. The Lord's the house of the Lord. So if we want to enter the house of the Lord, the doorway, the threshold, bhakti, then the key point is guru, the spiritual master. The other 19 items are simply auxiliary. Without the guru, without serving him, without surrendering to him, without serving him, learning from him, and taking diksha from him, then one will not enter the doorway. One cannot enter the house of the Lord. One cannot live in the house of devotion, nor please the Lord, or attain spiritual perfection. So the conclusion of these first three 20 limbs, which is one third of the totality, approximately, there are 64 limbs of devotion. So the conclusion is that devotion means, Krishna bhakti means guru bhakti. No guru bhakti, no Krishna bhakti. No guru seva, no Krishna seva. No guru sambandha, no Krishna sambandha. No relationship with guru, no relationship with Krishna. So we'll start tomorrow with the next series of verses 84 through 92. And these list 44 principles. So that will be the total. That will be, these will be the 64 limbs of devotion. 20, 10 do's, 10 don'ts, and then 44 actions, sevas that we're to perform. And mostly it's all sevas in relation to deity and to the deity. Almost all the four, there's 64 limbs of devotion. 10 are things to avoid, the negative things. 10 are things that we should do. And of those 10, the most important thing is surrender to the guru and serve him with love and devotion and respect. So 10 limbs are basically, first serve the Guru, then serve the Guru, surrender the Guru and serve him. That's one third of the totality of the bhakti. And then the next point is, avoid these 10 things. Then the third division is to serve the deity in all these favorable ways, and there are 44 ways listed. And this is a kind of an overview. Tomorrow we'll hear about these 44 practices, which basically are all about Krishna Anukulya. Krishna Anukulya, how to please Krishna, who will manifest before us as the Archamurti, in our home or in the mandir. So this pleasing the Lord, bhakti means pleasing the Lord. So out of the 64 limbs of devotion, 44 basically are all about directly pleasing the Archamurti or pleasing Krishna. And then 10 are about things that displease the Lord. And then 10 are introductory principles which enable one to please the Lord. 10 principles are the qualifying activities which prepare one and qualify one to please the Lord. And 4 of those 10 are all about Guru. And of those 10 and of those 20, the most important is to take shelter of Guru. That's what Vishnu says. These 20 limbs, the 10 do's and the 10 don'ts, are the door to bhakti. And the first 3 angas, the first 3 out of the 20 are the most important, and that's surrender to Guru, take diksha and receive shiksha, and serve him. So the first 10 are all about Guru and disciple. Guru Shishya Sambandha. Then avoid the items which disqualify one for devotion. And then get on with it. Practice the 44 positive actions. 44 positive acts, 44 positive acts or expressions of devotion which please the Lord and endear the disciple to the Guru and to the Lord. Those 44 items we'll hear tomorrow. Is there any questions? Why do we see sometimes someone as our enemy? Krishna gives the answer to that in the Bhagavad Gita. Icha dvesha samuttena dvanda mohena bharata. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the living entities are born into this material world overcome by the duality of delusion, dvandva. Dvanda means two, dvandva, dvaita. Mohena, moha means illusion, dvanda mohena. The jivas, you and I, we're jivas, we're born in this world, we're overcome by two things, dualities, desire and hate, icha, desire. Icha dvesha. Dvesha means rishya, means envy. So this is the primordial nature of the conditioned soul, envy. And envy and hate are the same thing. So if there's envy, then there's enemies. Envy is the antithesis of prema. That's why the Bhagavatam begins by saying, this book is not for the envious. Dharma projata kaita vocha paramo nirmatsaranam satam. Nirmatsarya. Nirmatsarya. Nirmatsarya means envy. Nirmatsarya. Those that are free, from envy, they can deeply appreciate and enter into the study of Bhagavatam. The envious cannot. They read the Bhagavatam, they'll become more envious of God, more critical of God, more opposed to God. What is this? How is this? He did that, this, that. Bhagavatam is for the Bhagavats, for the devotees. The book Bhagavat and the devotee Bhagavat. They come together and they study. They relish each other's association in the pages of the Bhagavatam. So it's paramo nirmatsaranam satam. Satam means the sadhus, the saintly, truthful persons. Paramo, they're supremely paramo nirmatsaranam. They're completely parama, transcendental to all envy, friends and enemies, likes and dislikes. They're equipoise, vidya vinaya sampane. They can study Bhagavatam. They can appreciate Bhagavatam. So you say, why do sometimes we see enemies? Not sometimes, all the time we see enemies. This is due to impurity of the consciousness. Impure consciousness is subjected to these dualities, friends and enemies. When in pure consciousness, one sees Krishna everywhere. And Krishna is the emporium of love. When one is in pure consciousness, he sees the embodiment of love everywhere and the expression of love everywhere. As Krishna or God's love is everywhere being expressed in his creation. And every inch of his creation is an expression of his love for us. So everywhere friendly, everywhere supportive, everywhere positive. I'm surrounded by a friendly atmosphere. There's no enemies here. The only enemy is within. The enemy is within. There are no enemies without. The enemy is within, inside. My material desires are my enemy. No material desires, no enemies. Because as soon as there's material desires, then there's competition. And when there's competition, then there's someone wins, someone loses. So then there's fear. Desire, competition, fear. All this comes out of ignorance. It's all due to ignorance. When one is situated in transcendental knowledge, then there are no enemies. And one who's aspiring for transcendental knowledge and somewhat approaching the ocean of transcendental knowledge, the first proof that transcendental knowledge is working within one is that the conditioned soul begins to realize, oh, there are no enemies here. There is only one enemy here, me. I am my own worst enemy. It is my deficiency. There's my anarthas, my avidya, my aparads, my avidya, and my anarthas that I am carrying. The weapons are with me. I'm carrying the weapons. And the gun is being pointed at me, by me. And the sword is at my neck. The sword is at my neck, being held by me. And the bow is being drawn by me and the arrow is aimed at me. Usually you want to aim the gun at somebody else. Hey, boom, my enemy. Boom. But this is, oh, I'm sorry. The gun is aimed at me. The enemy is within. Conquer the enemy, conquer the world. Other people in ignorance think that if you conquer everyone outside, then you conquer the world. And they try to do that. Alexander the Great, Hitler, Mussolini, Eisenhower, whoever, I don't know whoever they are, these characters. They tried, oh, so many enemies. The Iraqis are my enemy, the Germans are my enemy, the Japanese are my enemy. The Irish, the Catholics, the Protestants, the this, the that, the whatever. So then they go in a massive slaughter campaign of massive slaughter the enemy, annihilate the enemy. So they annihilate thousands and millions of enemy, and still they find that the enemy is still there, because the enemy is inside. Conquer the enemy inside, conquer the world. Vijay. Pram Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. So that's where Lord Chaitanya came. He came to make us all conquerors, world conquerors. Conquer the world of the senses. Conquer the vast frontier of the mind. How many continents in the mind? The mind of so many continents. Conquer the empire of the mind by Nam Sankirtan. And it's a glorious, then it becomes a glorious victory. Pram Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtan. By marching in the army of Lord Chaitanya and taking part in his Nam Sankirtan movement, then one can become victorious. Wholesale, like Prabhupada said, what did he say? He said becoming a devotee means declaring a war against the illusory energy. Declaring a war against Maya. Where is that Maya? Maya's outside across the ocean somewhere? We have to get in a battleship and cross the ocean and fight the enemy on foreign shores. The enemy is in another country. No, the enemy is right here. We get in the boat of the holy name. We get in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan boat. And we cross the vast oceans of the mind. Cross the ocean of the mind. And in that ocean of the mind there are so many enemies. Crocodiles of lust and whales of envy. Alligators of greed. And they're trying to swallow our boat and chop up our minds and lives. So we have to sail that ocean of the mind in the boat of Lord Chaitanya and conquer the enemies, lust, anger, greed, and envy. The whales, crocodiles, and sharks. Sharks of lust. Hammerhead sharks. Hammerhead sharks ready to devour us. And impersonal philosophies are also compared to these type of animals. Hare Krishna, so we'll continue there tomorrow. The 44 good things we have to do.